And look, we're wearing matching beanie sleepers. Totally awesome. I'm so glad you're here. I'm going to do my little intro, but that was like the quickest get on ever. Usually I'm like,
I can log off if you want, and then we do it again.
No. I love it. No. Thank you. So hi, everybody. My name is Ben. I'm the creator of the Beanie Sleeper, this little guy. So the Beanie Sleeper, which is a special lightweight beanie with a built-in sleep mask right here that blocks light and keeps your head warm and comfy without overheating. So I want to welcome you all to Sleeping with Ben, which I guess I'm now calling SWB. I'm like very chic that way. Welcome to SWB. I'm Sleeping with Ben. We're a chat show where we talk to interesting people about their lives. And my guest today is, I'm going to say this is my 15th episode. And I honestly think you may have the most interesting story out of all 14 episodes. So his name is Dirk Van Velzen. I hope I said that correctly. He's the founder of the Prison Scholar Fund. Hey, Dirk, how are you?
Perfect. Thanks for inviting me. This is great. I love the beanie. Thank you for the beanie.
My pleasure. And look, you're in bed and you have a pillow. See, this is how we do. He's all ready to cuddle and to chat. So so this is going to be a very interesting conversation because I take it from we were going to have basically almost three parts. The first is pre-prison, right? Because as I said, and as you've told me, you're a felon with a burglary was your kind of thing. And that was like this, but there was a beginning and an after to that. And I want to talk about that as well. So talk to me about, first of all, tell us a little bit about yourself, but then go into like what your life like was before you got, maybe you started your first burglary. Can we talk about that? And then we'll move forward.
Oh, sure. Okay. So it's the burglaries that got me to prison. And when I say burglaries, I make the distinction between commercial and residential. So I was like breaking into businesses and warehouses, you know, not like there's a better way to do burglaries, but that's different than breaking into people's houses and stealing their VCR. Mm-hmm. But that was kind of like, I had a long path to how I became a burglar, which was back in the 1990s. You know, I was just doing a whole bunch of little small crimes, and I kind of failed at school. I failed at running businesses. So I just, you know, became a criminal, started stealing things and selling drugs or doing some kind of, you know, credit card scams or, you know, whatever they were. And then I kind of got good at the burglary part. So I just, that was my livelihood for a few years.
Let me ask you, I guess when you go down that path, you do hit kind of like burglary, drugs, all that kind of stuff, because that becomes, you're in that world, right?
Yeah.
So, but you decided, I mean, that I guess it's so funny, I don't want to say a career choice, but you decided not to do the drugs and stick strictly to burglaries, but then you decided not to do the petty stuff, but to do the bigger stuff.
Yeah. I just kind of figured out how to do it well. So it's great work if you can get it, they say.
Oh my God. So without teaching people how you do a burglary well, was there I'm kind of curious, was there like a trick to it?
Oh, well, yeah, there's a learning curve. And of course we did everything in like a really regimented like process way to do it. So we could kind of not get caught. And so, you know, we started small, like any business, and then we grew with our team, and then we just started doing bigger things. Same process, just bigger. And then, of course, my partner, on one of our burglaries, he dropped his pager. This is back in the days when we had pagers. So,
oh, my God.
So they kind of got him and then unraveled the whole network. And then I fled to California and kept doing burglaries down there. So,
yeah. And I think there's even a stay in Arizona that we'll talk about because that's more in the middle of this.
Correct.
But I think interesting, as you said, well, first of all, you called it a business, which is kind of, I believe you really thought of it that way because you're at heart an entrepreneur. So I'm not surprised you called this enterprise a business. The second thing is you said you really were bad at school, which I find both interesting and ironic given you created the prison scholar fund, but we'll get into that. But what was it? So growing up where you did, were you in like a middle class family, lower middle class? Where were you on that economic scale?
Yeah, you know, pretty much I would say good, solid middle class. You know, my dad was an entomologist with the FDA, which is like a bug scientist. And, you know, my mom, she worked kind of like as a secretary for the church. He's, you know, pretty religious. Mm-hmm. And so we had a house out in the rural Bothell. It wasn't nothing, you know, nothing fancy, but we had some property and we had a house, and mm-hmm. I can't blame mm-hmm. anything on my bad upbringing. So mm-hmm. it was like, you know, we didn't really do without.
So it was really, I remember you describing this to me as just like something you did for fun. So I don't know if you intended to make this a career, but you were doing it, what, because you were wild, because you had too much energy?
Oh, so this is actually, I don't think we talked about this part. So
okay.
Some of the context there was, excuse me, sniffles. So back when I was in high school, I joined the Force Recon program with the Marine Corps. Mm-hmm. And the reason I did that is I kind of already knew that I had in me like this untamed wildness, I guess you could say. And so I was always mm-hmm. just doing like little stupid things around the neighborhood, you know, just blowing up mailboxes and just being a troublemaker.
Blowing up mailboxes, really?
You know, like when you're a kid, you put an MAD in the mailbox and just like, I don't know if everyone does that anymore, but that was kind of the thing.
I don't know. Okay, no. Go ahead. I'm listening.
It's just like ridiculous stuff when you're like in junior high or high school.
Sure.
So
sure.
I kind of figured, well, I should probably take my wildness and find an outlet for it, which could be like, you know, join the Marines. So I did that by joining this program called Force Recon, which is kind of like the Marine Corps version of Navy SEALs. And so the timing is important, though, because you kind of want to go to boot camp in the winter, when it's really hot out in San Diego, and then you want to go through BUDS in the summer because there's a lot of swimming. So that means I had the semester to kill from, you know, graduating in June to enroll, you know, to leaving for boot camp in January. So I went to Washington State University for a semester. And, of course, college was always important for my family. It wasn't really important to me. So I went to Wazoo just to get some partying out of my system. that was the plan. But, of course, when I was at Wazoo, then I met some interesting people, and I started my burglary career there. And I've kind of viewed it as, well, I'm just kind of training to be a special operations soldier by doing some sort of repetitious entry. So then, I got caught doing one of those burglaries at Wazoo. Oh, for the uninitiated, Wazoo is Washington State University. And then, so one of the burglaries I got caught for there gave me a felony. That felony actually kept me on the Marine Corps. So
I got you. Was that was your first felony?
Yeah, that was my first felony, and that was what kind of sunk that ship.
But yeah.
Kind of along the lines of how the first burglary started was when I was there, I met the Animal Liberation Front people, and they were breaking into the labs, the research labs of the university, and freeing the monkeys and the dogs. Mm-hmm. And I love animals. So I figured, hey, what a great place to learn how to be a burglar for a good cause.
So,
right?
So you have training, in a sense. Let me ask you. First of all, I also want to say to anybody who's watching, if you have a question, please type it in and we'll see if we can get an answer for you. So let's fast forward just a bit, because there was a final burglary before you got caught. Before you got caught the last time, how many felonies did you have? I know the one from college. How many did you have before you had the final burglary?
I should know this because I'm writing a book about this with one of my friends, and we pulled my whole background on it to try to tell the story. But I can't remember how many burglaries it was now. Let's just say 15.
Not burglaries, but felonies, because you didn't get caught for all of them, right?
All right. Oh yeah, exactly. So if felonies in general, I would say probably about 15. If give or take.
Felonies. Wow. Yeah. You were very serious about that. So I get that. So you're like a wild child. You're bored, it sounds like. You have no direction, it sounds like. But you had a good upbringing. You had good parents. So a lot of it was really on you.
Oh, 100%.
You kind of 100% on you, which I kind of commend that you're not saying it was this, it was that, it was the other. You take on, and that's kind of like, I think, why we friended each other, because I know you have a sense of responsibility, regardless of all the other crap. You always have this, you have a big sense of, you know, responsibility. And I think, and I respect that a lot. So
you
get, the final time you get caught, you're in jail, and then they sentence you to how many years in prison did they sentence you to?
So I had kind of a couple of things going on. One was all the burglaries in Washington that I fled from, that was probably 25 years worth of charges. But then I go to California because I was on the run. So I go to California. I'm on the run in California. I keep doing burglaries down there. So they catch me in California, and I get about 10 years in California, but they give me half time. So I have to do 5 years.
Right.
Because that's a first-time offender in California, so you don't get so much time. And it's really, I only did like 2 years for the burglaries, but 8 years for a charge called unlawful assault weapon activity, because I broke into Santa Barbara Sheriff's Department armory and I stole all their guns. So,
oh my God. Okay.
And it's funny because so, even though it's the armory, it's still just a commercial burglary. It's, you're breaking into a building. Is but taking a machine gun, I actually took the sheriff's personal Tommy gun, and that was a machine gun, so that gave me that special charge of unlawful assault weapon activity.
And you were about, and if you were in college, you were about 20, 21 when all this stuff, when the bigger stuff happened?
Oh, I think I was 28 when I finally went to prison.
Yeah, but that was because it took some time to get you into prison, right?
Oh, yeah.
But how old were you with your last burglary?
That was probably 27 because, you know, they caught me in California.
Oh, pretty much a year before. So you're in your, like, mid to late 20s when all this happened. So I think you said you got to prison in 99.
They arrested me in August of 99. I was in the county jail for about a year. And then when I finally got to prison, it was about 2000.
So 2000, and you got paroled in 2015, is that correct?
Yeah, so I got paroled from California in 2004, where they kind of released me. Then Washington picked me up, and I do my 12 years in Washington. And then I get released. We don't have parole up here, but we have, like, community supervision, same kind of thing.
Right.
So that was May 7th, 2015, and I call that my rebirth day. Okay.
Your rebirth day. Okay. I want to talk about the rebirth day, but I want to go back a bit because when you got into prison in 1999, you had mentioned to me that you probably because you were bored, you became interested in school, in learning again. But the thing was, there was an issue with Pell Grants. Is that correct?
That's right.
Yeah. So tell us how you found that out. I mean, first of all, you had no interest in school, and now you're in prison. You have a ton of interest in school. Was that mainly because you were bored?
Yeah. So I can talk about that trajectory.
Yeah.
In the county jail, when you're in prison, there's nothing to do. Just watch TV and do push-ups. And in my county jail where I was at, we didn't have TV, so it's really just on your own doing your time. But they have a book cart, so I was reading. You know, I've always liked to read, so I was reading. Mm-hmm. You know, a book a day. You know, Louis L'Amour's and Stephen King's and Dean Koontz, and I'm just plowing through all these books, and I finally had the idea, oh, I remember this college thing. You know, this is always important to my family, which I didn't really take seriously because, you know, I was probably just not, you know, I was immature at the time, didn't have delayed gratification ability to do. So I was like, hey, you know, as long as I'm reading a book a day, I might as well read a book and learn something. That's when I started looking into the college thing, you know, long story short. I figured, and then I left the county jail and went to the prison, and I heard that when I got to the prison, I could get the Pell Grant, which is, for the people that don't know, is every low-income person in America gets a Pell Grant, and it's good for, you know, a few $1,000 a year for tuition and books and other things. So I figured that'd be enough to pay for my tuition for distance education. And it would have been, except the Pell Grant was taken away from prisoners back in 1994 during the war on drugs, tough on crime era, and which is kind of ironic because if you want to be tough on crime, you increase rehabilitation opportunities but they kind of viewed it as being tough on criminals is the same thing as being tough on crime. So we'll just make prison really hard for criminals, but that doesn't do any good for recidivism.
Yeah, definitely. So you learned about the Pell Grant, but that didn't really stop there because you became determined to get, to go to college. But where did you find the money for that?
Oh, yeah. So when I was in prison, I hadn't really reconnected with my father, so he wasn't a resource to use. Mm-hmm. But, you know, as an entrepreneur, when you're in prison, there's all sorts of artists. They have beautiful drawings. You know, there's things I could like, make or sell from prison. And I was trying to figure out how to do that, including, like, you know, turn the art into calendars or mouse pads or T-shirts, which could have worked, but the margins are really slim trying to do all this from prison. And it had to be like on a print on demand kind of deal. And I didn't have a marketing budget, and the internet was not like it was these days. So, so I wasn't really able to get that off the ground. And then I tried, you know, I was just kind of investigating that for a year or two. And then finally my dad got back on board. You know, we mended fences or whatever they call that, or mended bridges, built bridges.
Mended fences. Yeah.
Mended fences.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then he was paying for my education, you know, lucky me.
Okay.
So I was lucky.
So your dad came on board with Team Dirk, and yeah, he's paying for education. Now, you were at this point going for your associate's degree, correct?
Yeah, I was actually, initially I was going to University of Colorado at Boulder because they had a lot of really cool classes, but they didn't offer a degree. Then I found that Penn State had a distance education program with a degree, and that was the associate's degree. And they only offered the associate's degree in business. And then the closest thing to that was the bachelor's in organizational leadership, which is, so I got both of those.
Okay. Well, first of all, congratulations. That's awesome, right? You're taking your education in your own hand, but it didn't stop there. You wanted to help other people. So how did you come up with the idea to create the Prison Scholar Fund? Did that idea happen just then, or did somebody come and talk to you and say, hey, I want to do that? How did you come up with this idea for the Prison Scholar Fund?
It's kind of organic, too, because so as I was struggling to pay for my own education, a lot of people shared that vision, you know, shared that dream of going to school. And that was just a thought at that time. And then, of course, when my selling calendars with prisoner art failed, and then my dad stepped in, I still had the idea of, well, maybe there's some way we could support other students. And the reason for that is, as I was going to school, you know, I'm in the day room studying. I have all my textbooks there. People would come up very frequently, and they would see me going to school. And they would say, oh, my God, I would do the same thing. How do you do it? You know, I'm like, the answer sucks. It's like, well, you got a rich dad or a rich uncle, then you're just kind of fucked. I don't know if you can swear on here.
Too late.
Yeah, too late. because there's no programs. The Pell Grant was taken away. And when the Pell Grant was in existence, there was about 350 college prison programs across America. When they shuttered the program, that dropped to about 8. So unless you're fortunate to be in a prison that has one of those few programs, well, you're just doing your time.
It really is down to luck. One, do you have family with means?
Yep.
That's super important. Are you in the right prison that even offers that?
Yeah.
Right? Because you could have a desire to go to school and not be in a prison that offers that. And basically, that's it. There's no other. You can't just move around and request a new prison, right?
Yeah.
You're kind of stuck.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's not like our penal system makes it easy to rehabilitate. That's what I'm getting.
Right. It's funny, and I was really curious once I started digging into this stuff. I'm the kind of guy that reads policy because, remember, I like to read. So I started reading about what's the purpose of prison? You know, like, what is the, like, there's a difference between the legislative intent and the operations, and I would always battle them on legislative intent versus execution of it. And then as I was investigating that, I was saying to myself, well, what is the reason for prison? I mean, obviously we kind of know what it is, but what's the intent? And the intent is three things. One is punishment, public safety, and rehabilitation. And rehabilitation is the last one. So when we say, oh, shoot, they don't have any rehabilitation programs, that's not really the legislative intent for prison. It's punishment, number one, public safety, number two, and then, oh, by the way, as long as they're there, we'll rehabilitate them.
So people are coming up to you in the day room, and they're like, I want to do that. How do I do that? And you're like, I don't really know. But that you didn't stop there. You went and found out. When did it hit you to become a 501(c)? When did it hit you that you could actually find money to help your inmates, your fellow inmates?
Yeah, so this is kind of the part of the rest of that organic story, which was then I saw the demand for wanting to go to school, and then I was trying to think of maybe I could start some kind of nonprofit organization or something. I didn't know anything about revenue streams, but I was figuring, well, maybe we could reinvestigate that calendar sales or whatever we're going to do with the artwork. Mm-hmm. And then I still hadn't really figured that out yet. And concurrent to all of this, I was pen pals with one of my textbook authors. Remember, at University of Colorado Boulder, I took like 8 psychology classes, and part of it was probably introspection to see if I was really a sociopath or what was wrong with Dirk. And I Well, anyways, I found out I wasn't a sociopath because I have empathy, but I have a lot of the other traits. So that textbook author, I never wanted to ask him for money because I didn't want our relationship to be a hustle. But then when I got transferred from California to Washington, out of the blue, he sent me a $1,000 check and says, hey, here's for your nonprofit. Good luck. And then...
So you told him about the nonprofit to probably get his opinion, but never asked him for money. And then right. He just was like, I believe in you because of your correspondence. That's amazing. So what did you do with that $1,000?
Yeah, so at this time now I'm up in Washington, and we use that money. We apply for the 501c3 status, and it took us almost a year to get that. So, and then during all of this, as soon as I had the money, it's like, oh, shit, I'm actually going to start a nonprofit. So I had to, like, write to all these resource centers to figure out how to write articles of incorporation, bylaws, conflict of interest policies, all that stuff. Get everything lined up. Then we apply for, you know, to incorporate in Washington State, and then the 501c3 status with the feds. That took about a year to get, which is a funny story, which we probably don't have enough time for. And then once I actually had the 501c3 status, so we got about $1,000, you know, $1,000 minus the 150 for the fees. Then we gave a first scholarship to my last Sally that was in California. So now we're legit. We're a 501c3. We awarded a scholarship. We got some money in the bank. And then Washington was shipping people out of state to Arizona for overcrowding in Washington, and Arizona had those private prisons. Back in those days, it was CCA, which is Corrections Corporation of America, and they've rebranded to CoreCivic, which is kind of like the Patriot Act. Sounds nice, but it's still terrible. But the good news is now that I was in a shitty private prison, they didn't care what I did. Like, if I was in a Washington prison, there's no way I could write grants or, like, run a business. But in Arizona, they just didn't care. So I had all this freedom to operate.
Let me stop you right there really quick. So now I want everybody to know we're still in the early 2000s for this. So you don't have things online that you could basically go to a website, fill it out online, and send it. You're literally having to learn everything on your own and then physically send it through the mail, right?
Yeah, and this is a major funny story, too, if you want me to jump into
that. Go ahead. Okay. Yeah, so then I want to move forward. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I had no idea how to research anything, just like you said. So somebody told me, to make the story short, he goes, oh, instead of selling calendars for your nonprofit, you write grants. And I said, well, what's a grant? He's like, basically you write a letter to a foundation, they give you money. I was like, come on. That doesn't happen, really? So he convinced me that's the way to go. So I had business. I had all these business magazines because I was reading, and I wrote down the numbers of 142 foundations, or the names of 142 foundations, finally got their addresses, and because I could mail things, I had access to the computers and the printers in the education department, printed out all these letters of inquiry, mailed them all out, and my dad was really pissed at the time because I'm spending all this money on postage, and he's thinking that money could have been used for somebody's scholarship. So we have this tension, and as it turns out, you know, so my poor dad is up in Washington, and he's getting all these no's coming back from the foundations because without the ability to research, I run into cancer research foundations, Jewish foundations, foundations in Chicago, and everyone is saying, sorry, that's not what we do, but good luck. And my poor dad's up in Washington getting all these no letters, and he's just getting pissed. See, I told you, you're wasting your money on postage. And then the Annenberg Foundation calls him up and says, hey, you only asked us for 14 grand. Where do you want the check? And then my dad was like, holy shit, this is what a great idea. And then from that point forward, we kept doing that and it raised about 60 grand.
I think that's amazing. So how many people, so you raised 14,000. How many people can that help?
I don't remember how many of the 14,000 helped, but we served 110 people before I got out in 2015, and we raised just under 60 grand from writing grants for prison.
So 14 people, 14 inmates who probably never even thought.
No, 110 inmates.
Oh, shoot. So 110 inmates who probably thought they would never, ever be able to get an education.
Yeah. And
meet you. Meet you. And now all of a sudden they have the opportunity.
Yeah, and that's the feedback I was getting because, you know, some of these people we were in 24 different states. I had never met these people. And when it was super trippy for the person that got the scholarship, because they heard there's absolutely nothing. And when you're a prisoner and you try to apply for a regular scholarship, there's no fucking way you're going to get it, because you're competing with, you know, a single mom of three working three jobs versus some, you know, piece of shit prisoner who's going to get it.
So you are, I mean, there's a lot stacked against you. So I love a couple of things. I just love how you're working it from the inside, that you, dude, you're total entrepreneur. I'm going to make calendars. I'm going to get this done. No, Dad, I have to buy postage so I can get this stuff out. So that's incredible to me. So you get out in, I think, 2015, you said, right?
Right.
And so so we're in 2021. First of all, I don't want to wait till the end for this, but it's prisonscholarfunds.com.
Prison Scholar Fund. And
Prisoner.
Yeah, just Prison Scholar.
Prison Scholar Fund.
But our website is prisonscholars with the s.org.
Prisonscholars.org. Yeah. You guys, I went to the website. It's pretty spectacular. You can also read about his board and everybody. This is like a legit, real way to help people who are really not getting any help, but who desperately want it and need it. So I'm saying this before we close, but I want you guys to go there, but I'm not done yet. So by the time you got out, you started to set this thing in motion, like for real.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So, you know, in the last couple of years of prison, I decided I was going to do this for real, of course. And so I read everything I could about nonprofit management, leadership, finance, all that stuff. And then the moment I got out of prison from work release, I went to the University of Washington because they had a nonprofit management program. And I didn't really pick up any new knowledge there because I had read all the books at this point. But I just really built a great network, and the University of Washington is awesome. And then my very first board coming out of prison were a lot of my cohorts from that class. So we got my dad off of the board to avoid the conflict of interest, built a new board. And then shortly after that, I did this thing called the Social Venture Partner Fast Pitch, which is like a business plan competition. It's almost like a TED Talk. I won first place in that, and they filmed it. So I had this cool little TED Talk video, and I used that to apply to Stanford, and they had this social entrepreneurship program. So I got into the social entrepreneurship program at Stanford, which was at the business school. So that was in 2016. So less than a year out of prison, you're on campus at Stanford at the business school, which is like, how about that? that's a magical place.
So where are you at today? Where is Scholar Prison Fund today as of now?
Yeah, so even though today we have more of a movement for criminal justice reform and prison reform and all that stuff, it's still hard to raise money for educating prisoners. So it's really, really hard. It's always a struggle to raise money for tuition and textbooks, because even though we had good foundational support when I was in prison, I think that was just from the uniqueness of the situation of what it was. But now that we get out, most foundations don't want to fund scholarships because it sounds like a pass-through. Like, a lot of foundations specifically don't fund scholarships. So we have to kind of rearticulate the program as more of a program than a pass-through scholarship. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, when COVID hit, you know, we do the education on the inside and the transition on the outside, whether that's job placement or it's a university. So when COVID hit, we've really gone to helping system-impacted people facing food insecurity, you know, eat. So the food business has been huge. We probably passed out about $1 million worth of food already. So it's easier to get food than it is to get scholarship money. But it's a struggle.
But even with the food, you're focusing it more on the families of incarcerated people, I think you told me. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. You have to be system impacted. They self-identify. Even though I call myself a felon or an ex-con, you know, the right words to use would be like former prisoner, system impacted, justice involved, because then you're not labeling the person, you're labeling the situation or the activity.
I gotcha. I got to say, I'll admit it. I'm a complete, I did that when I did our intro, because that's how I thought. So thank you for educating me on that. On how to actually the right words to use when I speak to you. And I appreciate that. And I apologize for the other thing.
And I'm not that sensitive because I'm just, you know, that's just my personality.
Yeah, but
I know it's not like we shouldn't label people for this one moment, like the this one time they made a terrible decision that follows them through the rest of their lives.
100%. I appreciate you telling me that. Before I get on to my closing, how can we reach you? How do we reach your organization? Tell people what we can, how do we reach you, first of all, what your organization, and what can we do for
sure.
you?
We're on Instagram, of course, Facebook, and Twitter, all at Prison Scholars, one word. Our website is, prisonscholars.org. You can send me an email, dirk@prisonscholars.org, or even just give me I say don't call me, but text me because I never pick up numbers I don't know. And my number is 206-734-5425. So 206-734-5425. And we could always use volunteers to help process. We get thousands of letters from all across the nation because we're the only organization that does this. So it's good news and bad news. Is that the bad news is we get thousands of people that just heard about us. Like they had their, hey, mom, Google scholarships for prisoners. And we're the only one that comes up pretty much. So we could use help volunteering with the processing, mentoring, outreach, to tutoring. And, of course, we could always use support. So if anyone wants to make an investment in prisoner education to help change some lives, that pays off big time. People can get jobs. They have skills. Especially when you come out of prison with a felony, but if you have some kind of countervailing equity, like a college degree, that kind of gets you at least your foot in the door, so you can argue for employment. Other than that, that really contributes to our homeless. I don't know what city you might be watching this from, but if you have a problem with homeless people or the houseless or houseless people, a lot of that is because 70% to 80% of them are formerly incarcerated. So it's really hard to, get a job when you're a felon. And if you can't get a job, how do you pay rent? And you're living in a tent all of a sudden. So.
And I'm going to have all of that information in the show notes. So we'll get all that taken care of. Perfect. Let me do my wrap up. So I want to give a big thanks to Dirk for the cuddle today. You were awesome. You're a very good cuddler. Your girlfriend is very, very lucky. I also want to thank all of you for your continued support. Of what we're doing here with the cancer community and as well as Ronald McDonald House. I am changing the focus of Sleeping with Ben. We'll be starting this next week. We'll be more focused on the cancer community and cancer-related issues. So I hope you'll join us for that. Also, if you are looking for a Beanie Sleeper for either yourself or for a friend or support a family member, you can always go to beaniesleeper.com or click on my profile down below. And lastly, if you like Sleeping with Ben and like what we're doing and like the content, please share with your family or friends so we can grow. And also, if you would like to be a guest, I'm always looking for amazing people to talk to. I met Dirk in a meetup that we both go to, so it was just a really fantastic chance that I got to meet Dirk and learn his story and then share it with all of you. Please DM me here. And I just want to say thanks again, Dirk. I so appreciate you being here and being so open and so honest with everything that's gone on and from where you were to where you are.
Well, yeah, thank you. And thank you for letting me plug my organization. And I will plug the Beanie Sleeper. It's super comfortable. And I like it. I can't actually wait to use it. I just got in the mail. I just came back from the East Coast today or yesterday, so I haven't used it yet. But super neat. It's super comfortable. Pick one up.
Oh, my God. I love it. A plug. Anyway, thank you so much. And thank you to everybody. Have a great day. Bye-bye.